pleased to say Prime Minister David Cameron has joined me in the studio. There's a big public test of all the political parties coming up in a few weeks' time. It is, of course, the European vote. We'll see how they fare there. If you look at the numbers on a Sky News poll, David Cameron, of course, is the leader of the Conservative Party as well as being our Prime Minister. Well, it might not make particularly good reading for Mr. Cameron. At the front is UKIP with 31%, Labour 25%, Conservatives 23%. Prime Minister, you wrote in one of the newspapers yesterday, the Sunday Telegraph, an article saying, "I get it." What do you get, Mr. Cameron?
Well, what I get is that we need a plan in Britain to get the most out of our relationship with Europe. Now, that doesn't mean, like Labour and the Liberals say, saying everything's right about Europe, nor, I think, is it being like UKIP and saying there's nothing to recommend about engagement with Europe and we should just leave altogether. The right thing to do is to get stuck in, renegotiate, get some powers back, get a better deal, and then put the result to the British public in a referendum, in or out, by the end of 2017. That is what I think is the right answer for Britain. It's in our national interest, and that's the plan you get with me.
The trouble is, without wishing to be confrontational, Mr. Cameron, we feel we've heard this all before.
Well, we haven't heard it before. We haven't had an in-out referendum since 1975.
You did once promise a referendum before, didn't you?
Well, what I said is that I wanted a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty, but by the time I became Prime Minister, 27 countries, including Britain, had passed the Lisbon Treaty into law, and so it was no longer possible to have a Lisbon Treaty referendum. The Lisbon Treaty didn't exist. But if you have an in-out referendum, that is something that you absolutely can guarantee, because you can have an in-out referendum at any time. Now, I've said it has to happen by the end of 2017. By then, I believe I would have renegotiated Britain's place in Europe and got us a better deal. I've set out the things that I want to change, so people can judge me not only on that promise, they can also judge me on my record. I've cut the European budget, so we're going to give £8 billion less to the EU. I vetoed an EU treaty back in 2011, and I got us out of the bailout schemes where British taxpayers' money was being used to bail out Eurozone countries. The last Labour government put into that scheme. I got us out of that scheme. So I think I've got a track record in Europe of delivering for Britain, and I'll be putting that forward both in the European elections, but obviously at the general election in whatever it is, 362 days' time.
You're counting already, Prime Minister. Do you remember, many years ago, it was with me, you may recall, you described UKIP as closet racist fruitcakes and loonies, and you probably recall that.
I think it was back in 2006.
It was.
We've been talking about these things
for some years now. Why are they doing so well?
I think the reason why, the polls suggest that is that we've had a very difficult recession in this country. We're coming through it now. We're 1.5 million more people in work. The economy is growing faster than anywhere else in the G7. But it's been very painful for Britain's families. It's been difficult. And Nigel Farage has the advantage of being able to go round and say whatever he likes. He's not having to run a country or indeed run anything. He has to run a political party. And his competence in that is under question when you see some of the things his candidates and financial backers have been said.
He'd say the same of some of your candidates as well, of course.
He might well do, but if we just look at the kind of mass of different appalling remarks people have been saying from anyway, I don't want to get into all of that. There's a proper policy choice at this election.
Right.
Do you want a renegotiation, a referendum, and someone with a clear plan, proved by the action we've had over the last few years, also proved by the fact that we have turned round the economy? You know, the team I lead has taken long-term, difficult decisions, and that's delivered a growing economy that's generating jobs, we're cutting people's taxes. We've proved that you can be optimistic and upbeat about Britain's future. I think, in a way, that's the real failing with UKIP, is the whole approach is based on a deep pessimism about Britain's ability to change things in the world, whether our economy, whether building a future for our young people, whether changing the European Union to suit our interests. Their message is slightly, look, it's all hopeless, let's just give up, pull up the drawbridge, and dream of a better past.
I can see the passion in your case here. Why won't you debate Nigel Farage?
Well, I said we should have debates at the next election, and, you know, all our teams can get together and work out who ought to be debating.
He says you won't. He was sitting in that very seat. I'm sorry to point out you.
No,
I do apologise.
Let me
do the political point, which is to bend my finger. I do apologise. To do it this way. He was sitting in that very seat, Prime Minister, on Friday. This is what he said.
He doesn't want to have a debate with me. Of course he doesn't.
Why?
Because he knows that he... there are two issues on which he can't win. One is the European question, the promise of a referendum. 5 years ago, this bloke won the European elections, giving us a cast-iron guarantee that if he ever became Prime Minister, there'd be a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty and let us down. But the big one, Nick, and the one that no one wants to debate, and the reason they're throwing all this abuse at us, is this. It is completely pointless to talk about immigration figures and targets, all the while we're members of the European Union, when we have a total open door to nearly half a billion people. And Mr. Cameron does not want to have that debate with me.
Well, I'm happy to discuss debates for the next general election, you know, which is the election about the future of our country. It's an election in which I'm standing as a candidate. In these European elections, we're actually voting for members of the European Parliament, and it's they who should be debating each other about what it is they're going to achieve when they go to Strasbourg and Brussels. But to take on those very two points, firstly, in terms of immigration, there is a lot that we can do, and we have done it. Actually, we have capped migration on economic grounds from outside the EU. We've closed down 700 bogus colleges. For a lot of the last few years, migration within Europe has been relatively balanced, and the net migration coming into the UK has been from the outside. So I don't accept there's nothing that you can do, and indeed we've done it, and that's why net migration is down by a fifth, it's down by a third from outside the EU. And on the issue of referendums, I think the reason that Nigel Farage was sounding so defensive back then is that he knows there is only one person who can deliver an in-out referendum. He can't do it. Labour and the Liberals won't do it. I can do it, and I will do it.
It's reported that a lot of people won't bother to vote in a couple of weeks' time, as you may be aware, Prime Minister, particularly among young people, possibly those who have a first opportunity to vote. How important is it that they exercise their right to vote here?
It is important. You know, there's the answer that was always given to me by my parents about how people have fought and died for us to live in a free country and have the vote, and you should vote in respect of that, and vote in respect of the fact that there are countries all over the world where people would love to have the chance to choose or indeed get rid of their politicians. But I also think there's a further reason, practical reason, which is these elections do matter. The European Parliament makes rules that apply to our businesses. It spends money that comes out of our taxpayers' pockets. We should send people there who are going to turn up and vote for Britain. One of the things about my budget cut in Europe that saved Britain £8 billion is actually the UKIP MEPs, including Nigel Farage, voted against it in the European Parliament. So, you know, it's like that expression, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas. You know, you're sending men and women to the European Parliament. Send those that have got a plan for sorting out Britain's relationship and defending our interests.
So just a final point on these debates. I can tell you that LBC's put a lot of time together so that we can have some first-time voters for the next general election. Can we interest you in doing that debate, please? So it would just
always happy to do that. I mean, I think engaging with voters and first-time voters and answering their questions. I do public meetings up and down the country in people's workplaces, and some of the most valuable thing I do in terms of getting direct feedback from people.
Your Prime Minister, which reported there are problems in the coalition, are two of your boys fighting? Nick Clegg, my friend Nick Clegg, who sits there regularly, of course. My friend Nick Clegg and Michael Gove. What's this fight all about, Prime Minister?
Well, look, you get tensions and pressures in coalition, inevitably. I think, though, never mind all the stuff in the newspapers, look at the actual record on education. And the fact is, under this government, we've got 250,000 fewer children in failing schools. We've got academy schools and new free schools helping to drive up standards. We've got more teachers with 2-1s and firsts going into teaching than the case for many, many years.
But why are the tensions at the top, Prime Minister? Why are they calling each other things like zealot and idiot? What's going on? Don't you need to get their heads together?
Well, look, of course, and I always do, and that's part of running a coalition, and there are inevitably tensions and pressures. But what I see is actually Michael Gove and David Laws working together very well to deliver a key part of our economic plan, which is putting in place good schools and good skills for our young people. And, you know, I think really when you look across the coalition government, what's been remarkable is not that there have been some spats, and of course you get spats between two political parties, but what's been remarkable is the amount of good work that's been done to sort out things like education. You know, 1.7 million apprenticeships delivered under this government. That is a vast number, and that's not the sign of a dysfunctional government. That's the sign of a government that is actually getting on with the job and delivering for people.
Your deputy, Nick Clegg, has sat in that seat with me on Call Clegg for 18 months, and we've had a lot of conversations about all sorts of things, policies, onesies, goodness knows what else. Do you know what really annoys him about you?
Yeah, go on.
That you're beating him at tennis.
We've only played twice, actually, to be fair.
Now, what is this down to? Because he was captain of Tennessee.
He's got very good style. I think anyone watching us having a knock-up would think, well, that Clegg will win that one.
Yeah.
But
you're a better fighter, are you?
I don't know what it is.
Well, it's not secret tuition, is it? You've not been having extra help, Prime Minister.
I do sometimes have tennis lessons. One way of keeping fit.
Yes. With whom do you have those lessons, Prime Minister?
There's a very nice lad from Aylesbury who...
I thought you were having some professional tuition.
I have, actually. Someone not just down the corridor from here, who I just saw a minute ago.
Is it true that you have used Andrew Castle so you can beat Nick Clegg at tennis?
I come out on the radio. I have only a few times, I have to admit. But he's quite good at tennis.
He's pretty good.
I don't know if you've noticed this.
He's pretty good. Yes.
He has some quite punishing routines he puts you through. And so that's probably helped a bit.
Okay. Coming back to Europe, the important conversation we're having, of course, that all-important vote. We hear what you say. But there's news today that the restrictions that relaxed for Bulgarians and Romanians, 10,000 have arrived in the first month. Prime Minister, that could put us on course to 120,000 people coming here. And you say you're being tough on immigration.
Well, first of all, let's wait and see what the figures actually say. But second of all...
Well, you've had sight of the papers today, sure.
Let's recognise a truth here, which is that I've said when new countries join the European Union, from now on, we should put in place much tougher and longer transitional controls. The problem comes about when you have countries that are have got much lower incomes than we have, and then the draw for people to come is so great. So in future cases of countries joining the EU, let's have longer transitional controls, or indeed say, until your country's reached a certain level of income closer to ours, those transitional controls will have to stay long term.
How frustrated do you get then about trying to put those controls in, and then you see this happen? Because, as you rightly say, a country like Britain, it is going to be a draw.
The big mistake was in 2004, when the government had the opportunity to put in transitional controls, when you had those 8 new members joining the European Union, and Britain alone didn't do that. We argued at the time Britain should, but the Labour government didn't do that, and there was a very big migratory move. You know, 1 million people came to Britain, one of the biggest migrations in recent years. Now, what we did as a government when we came in 2010 is extend the transitional controls on Romania and Bulgaria to their maximum extent, but I'm saying I want to go further than that in future, and when new countries join, we should have even longer controls.
Got a couple of email questions coming in. Emily in Redbridge, apparently you like Nando's. How do you like your chicken?
I went for hot on the sauce. Maybe I'll go for very hot next time, but it was delicious. It was quite a lively evening, I have to say. I thought it was going to be a quiet Thursday night. I was in Bristol.
Yes.
I'm doing a lot of campaigning.
Good. You know, I even know how much... I've done so much research. You paid £14.95 for chicken coleslaw and a glass of red wine. It's quite frightening.
We had a good evening.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Rachel in Bexley, should all food be halal labelled? Well, I imagine she means not necessarily all food, but if it's halal, of course, prepared.
I think the approach here should be, you know, if you're in a halal butcher, you know it's halal. If you're eating in a pub or some sort of French restaurant or something, you know... You'd expect that to be non-halal unless it's labelled. What I've said is let's not immediately go to some massive, great licensing and labelling scheme. Let's see if restaurants and butchers and other shops and premises can just do a bit of labelling. I gather actually Nando's is quite a good example. They do have shops where they serve halal chicken and they label it, because you'd expect in Nando's not to have halal chicken unless you're told.
There are other chicken restaurants available.
But I was just making that point.
Yes, indeed.
What we need here is sort of common sense, transparency and openness rather than perhaps an enormous government regulatory scheme.
Dan in Dartford, please, please, please don't let Nick Clegg deter you from getting tough on knife crime. This is, of course, the idea that I think it's 2 strikes and effectively you're in, and it has been reported that Nick Clegg's not enamoured of this idea,
Prime
Minister.
First of all, let's recognise we've actually made some good progress here. Knife crime is down 19% under this government. We introduced a tough new approach, which is that if you commit a crime with a knife, you should expect to go to prison, and we've got rid of cautions
for
that.
Why is Mr Clegg blocking this?
Well, this is stage 2, where we've been looking at whether or not there ought to be, if you're just carrying a knife, life rather than committing an offence with an
yes.
oath, whether if the second time that happens there should be automatic custodial penalties.
But he doesn't
penalties.
Agree with it, does he?
Nick Clegg doesn't agree with it. There's a debate taking place in the House of Commons tonight. I think we should listen to the debate. Let's listen to what Bernard Hogan Howe, the Met Commissioner, has been talking about this. Also, the Lord Chief Justice.
Well, they're in favour of what you're trying to bring about.
He said we need to have changes in sentencing. Let's listen to the debate and see if Nick Clegg will change his mind about this.
How fair is it that David Lowe, who is a presenter with BBC Radio Devon, lost his job instantly for playing a record that had the N-word in it, and your friend Jeremy Clarkson has survived in Top Gear for mumbling it?
Well, first of all, let's be clear, the N-word is unacceptable and has no place in our modern society. And let's celebrate the fact that actually we have done a huge amount to sort of drive racism out of public life, and a lot of good changes have been made. It does seem this radio presenter in Devon, that does seem a bit unfair. I understand the BBC have offered him his job back.
He's declined.
And that just seems to be, you know, mistakenly playing a song on the radio is different.
What about Clarkson did?
Look, I don't run the BBC. I've got enough on my plate. It seems to me that, anyway, a big apology was made and proper measures have been taken, but we've got to let the BBC run the BBC.
I can't let you go without getting a word on Nigeria and the situation. I'm going to ask, although your deputy almost shouted at me last week when I asked whether special forces were actually in position yet. Apparently you're not allowed to tell me that, but where are we?
Well, where we are is that I rang the Nigerian president and offered whatever help we could give. We agreed it would be helpful for Britain to send a team of experts, which will sit alongside the American team.
So they're
that
there
does
now,
include some people who are experts in counterterrorism and intelligence.
And they are there now?
And they are there now,
right,
yes.
Now, why couldn't Mr. Clegg have told me that when I asked him? He went nuts!
Well, I don't, maybe that was earlier in the week or something.
At least I get a candid answer. Right, so they are there. What are they going to do, Prime Minister?
Well, they're there to help advise, but, you know, we can't just sort of steam in and do whatever we want. This is a sovereign state with a well-funded armed forces, which we work with on counter-terrorism and policing and things like that. They'll be working around the clock now to try and locate these girls, and we should do everything we can to try and help them.
Yes.
But you know, as I say, we're limited in what we can do by what they ask us for, but the offer is there.
A lot of questions being asked about President Goodluck Jonathan's activities here and whether he could have done more earlier. How fair is that in your view?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. You know, it's an absolutely hideous, as I said, vicious, cruel, evil act to take these more than 200 children into a forest, but it's a forest area three times the size of Wales, so it is not, these things aren't easy to deal with. I don't think this is a moment to criticise. I think it's a moment to just get stuck in and see what more can we do to help and to make that offer.
And it doesn't make you reconsider the £270 million we send each year in aid to Nigeria. It's gone up by £70 million this year.
Well, you could argue actually that one of the things we need to do is recognise that when these countries are not functioning properly, when you've got extremists embedded in the north of this country, when you've got a division between the Muslim parts of the country and the rest, you need to make sure we help this country to deal with poverty, to deal with illiteracy, to help crack down on extremist teaching in schools. This isn't simply about sending in troops or special forces. This is actually about the long-term measures we need to help these countries to develop and to try and stop some of the problems at source. You know, I think, look, we've had this argument before. Defend our aid budget on the fact that we made a promise to the poorest in the world, and we have a moral responsibility to vaccinate children to prevent them dying from preventable diseases. But I could also make the argument, and maybe you'll find this more attractive, that actually helping Somalia, helping Nigeria, helping Afghanistan or Pakistan, if we can try and mend these countries through a combination of economic growth and aid and education and development, then we won't get the mass migration, we won't have so many asylum seekers, we won't have the problems of terrorism and violence. So there is a very strong national interest and national security argument for our aid budget, which I think is important to make.
A final few seconds just to say how important it is to vote in a couple of weeks, and indeed to give your final message to the
Please remember to vote in these European elections, and also here in London, remember to vote in the council elections. The councils are extremely equally important in terms of providing your services, setting your council tax, and as you know, Conservative councils cost you less. One of the best things we can do to help with the cost of living is re-elect Conservative councils, keep Boris Johnson as a strong Conservative mayor, and make sure we provide value for money for all our people.
Mayor and MP, possibly.
Mayor and MP.
You'd want him on the force.
I want him on the... I want to have my striker on the pitch.
OK. Next time you play tennis, can I be ball boy?
You certainly can. That would be a sight.
It would. You could sponsor my trousers with a Conservative logo. Prime Minister David Cameron appearing here.
Thank you.
Most of your party members as well, I should think, on LBC.